On this week, what I'd like to do is actually go back a Torah portion. Last week, as I was getting ready, I was sitting back going, oh, I want to talk about this and this, and I want to get into that, and I wanted to get into this, and so there's no way that's going to fit. There's just absolutely no way. And so basically, part of what I looked at last week just sort of grew into this week. And to be honest, what I start today could be a long running conversation. I'm not saying it's going to be, but it could be a long-running conversation in regard to the tabernacle. I pray in the end, one way or another, that it spurs you to go, oh, if that can mean this, then, and have all of those dominoes sort of go down, spurring you to go and check out those connections. To me, that's one of the most beautiful things of Scripture, is you find one truth, but it's never one truth. It's a doorway to all of these that just seem to line up quickly and show us a bigger picture. So, the Ark of the Testimony. Now, some may go, why not say the Ark of the Covenant? Well, because I'm trying to make a point. And one, it does mention it specifically. And to be honest, it might be better to say the Ark of the Testimony, because the reality is the Ark is nothing more than a bunch of wood and gold. To be honest, the Ark is literally an empty box, right? The atonement cover, or our mercy seat, is a separate piece and yet a part of it, right? Interesting of the word is that it's the cover, because of course atonement is covering. Now this becomes the centerpiece of the tabernacle, but this is not the centerpiece of the tabernacle. The centerpiece of the tabernacle is that which goes inside. That which was written by the finger of God as a covenant, as a contract, of which Yahweh resides over, because it's there. So, we're going to start with Exodus 25. I'm going to try and just go through, there's a number of verses here, just to set up the basis that we can then go and make connections from there. So, again, if you want to open Exodus 25, we're going to go through a number of verses. I'm starting with verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel, that they may bring me an offering from everyone who gives it. Willing with his heart, you shall take my offering. I need you to hold on. I want you to realize, to have this willing heart is the idea that these are treasures that you have, so they're like in your heart. So to give them, what are you doing? You're sort of taking them out of the storehouse, your heart, and giving them away, thus making room in your heart for something else. Okay? Hold on to that idea. And again, I could take you further. I think it's 32 or 33. He mentions the actual phrase again, and he says two or three times, those who are willing of heart, those who are open of heart. Verses 8 and 9, and let them make me a sanctuary. The purpose here is that I may dwell among them. According to all that I show you, that is, the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all the furnishings, just so you will make it. Now, I'm just going to throw out a theory here. Quite often we think, and it's been taught many places, that this pattern is in the heavens, and maybe it is. But we were made in God's what? Image. So that means that there's this idea of a structure, that this structure of God, we're like that structure. And so if there are two structures alike, then we call that a pattern. A pattern has been replicated, made again. What if the tabernacle is a pattern of symbolically of us? Or is it a pattern symbolic of Yahweh? And again, I'm not saying it is or not. I don't know. Just something to think about. The point here of making of this offering from the heart was that Yahweh would dwell among us. 25:10-11, you shall make an ark of acacia wood. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, 1.5 cubits its width, 1.5 cubits its height. You shall overlay it with pure gold inside and out. You shall overlay it. You shall make on it a molding of gold all around. So this ark, this box, is supposed to be of pure gold on the inside and on the outside. I need you to hold on to that thought. You're basically going to encapsulate this container on the inside and outside with pure gold, something of value. And the ark, by the way, is the first thing mentioned. And if Yahweh's going to mention it first, then it has importance, significance. Okay? Verses 12 through 14, you should cast 4 rings of gold for it and put them in its 4 corners. 2 rings shall be on one side, 2 rings on the other side. You shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. You shall put the poles into the rings on the side of the ark, and the ark may be carried by them. So we know that the ark is meant to be carried. It's supposed to be made of acacia wood. You sort of sit back and wonder, were some of their tents made of acacia wood? My point being is, if you came out of Egypt, I don't think they were all carrying a bunch of wood with them. And so when they come out of Egypt, one of the first things they got to make is what? A temporary shelter, right? Now, it could be made of a lot of things, but you know what? Where did they get all the acacia wood from? And why were they carrying it around with them? And what if these pieces are made of the same material that their tabernacles are made of? Meaning, what if they have acacia poles? I'm not saying they do, but what if? What if it's made? Because again, what if he brought them to this huge acacia grove? Who knows? Exodus 25:15-16. The poles shall be in rings in the ark. They shall not be taken from it. And you shall put into the ark the testimony which I will give you. Now the point being is, so far he said, make me an empty thing. This empty thing is going to help me come and live among you. But the thing is, it's not going to be empty forever, because you're going to put what in it? The testimony. The testimony of the tablets. The testimony is his Ten Commandments. The testimony is his word. So this, the first thing made, is supposed to be a container for his word. And this container is supposed to be gold on the inside and on the outside. Significant. 17 and 18. You shall make a mercy seat. Now, mercy seat comes on later as a translation. Basically, it would be like atonement cover. And if you're looking at Hebrew, Yahweh's truly making a point, because atonement means cover, so it would be like the cover covering. Twice. The word is replicated, or there twice. Of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, and 1.5 cubits its width, and you shall make 2 cherubim of gold, of hammered work. You shall make them at the 2 ends of the atonement cover or mercy seat. So here are going to be these 2 cherubim, heavenly creatures. Verses 19 and 20, make 1 cherubim at 1 end and a cherub on the other end. You shall make the cherubim on 2 ends of it in 1 piece with the atonement cover or mercy seat. And the cherubim shall stretch out their wings above, covering the mercy seat. So isn't that interesting? So they're going to cover the covering. Right? Not like Yahweh's trying to make a point here with the words, covering the covering. And they shall face one another. And the face of the cherubim shall be toward, so they're facing down towards the covering, the atonement cover. Verse 21, you shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark, now he says again, you shall put the testimony that I will give you. So twice he says, well, by the way, in case you forgot already, put the testimony in there. So really the whole purpose of all of what we're going to make is surrounding this very important thing, which is that I, Yahweh, am going to take something that's mine, my word, and I'm going to trust you with one of my treasures. And you're going to carry it around for me. And you're going to take care of it for me. So the point being is, we can go through all these details, these things, but realize it all comes down to these stones written with the words of God on them. Exodus 25:22, "And there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the atonement cover or seat, from between the two cherubim, which are on the ark of the testimony." Now again, he brings up, on the ark, and it's the ark of the what? Testimony. So it's the container of the word. Above the container of the word, I'm going to meet with you about everything which I will give you in commandment to the children of Israel. Now, here's a picture to try and get an idea. So you have this idea that Yahweh has his word, and the word is going to be in this ark. And between the cherubim is going to be this reality of some point of glory. And notice that the point being is everything is centered on a foundation that is his word. If his word's not here, then Yahweh isn't here. And if Yahweh's not here, then he's not dwelling among us. So everything is key to the point of his word. Hold on to that. Important points. You got to give from the heart. We went through that. Make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. The container is made first. Place the testimony in the ark. Put the word in the ark, in the container that was made. Yahweh will meet with us above the testimony, above the word, over the atonement cover, between the cherubim. Numbers 9, 15, and 16. Now on the day that the tabernacle was raised up, the cloud covered the tabernacle and the tent of testimony. You get that? Not only was it the ark of the testimony, it's the tent. So the whole purpose of the tent was the word. Right? The whole purpose of even making it. From evening to morning, it is above the tabernacle, like the appearance of fire. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day, and the appearance of fire by night. Okay? So what we get is that when this happens, going back to our little ark, is that above, we perceive above the ark is this pillar of fire and smoke, telling us that, by the way, here's Yahweh and here's his word. And what's intriguing, and you can go look at this, is that it speaks of the angels, we haven't got to this yet in angel study, as being fire going forth. What's intriguing is the column of fire like Jacob's ladder, where the angels are going forth between the heavenlies? Because it speaks of them as this fire that's moving, going and moving, and that's what angels are doing, are passing messages back and forth. And so you sort of wonder, well, if angels are fire and they're moving between the two places, are we seeing another vision of Jacob's ladder, where Yahweh is constantly on a daily basis communicating with man? Numbers 9, 17, and 18, whenever the cloud was taken up from above the tabernacle, after that the children of Israel would journey, and in the place where the cloud settled, there the children of Israel would pitch their tents. At the command of Yahweh, the children of Israel would journey. At the command of Yahweh, they would camp. As long as the cloud stayed above the tabernacle, they remained encamped. Important point. Here's the point. Did the ark get picked up and then Yahweh went? No. Yahweh was seen as the pillar of fire. He would move first. Then we'd have the ark taken down, the tabernacle taken down, and then the ark would go forward behind the pillar of fire. They go, well, let's see if we can see evidence. Well, we'll get to that. Numbers 9:23. At the command of Yahweh, they remained encamped. At the command of Yahweh, they journeyed. They kept the charge of Yahweh at the command of Yahweh by the hand of Moses. The point being is, by this pillar of fire example, they knew what Yahweh's plan was. Go, stay, continue journeying, whatever that was. Numbers 10:33 and 34. So they departed from the mountain of Yahweh on a journey of 3 days. Listen to this. And the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh went before them, the people, for 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. And the cloud of Yahweh was above them by day, and they went out from the camp. So you get this idea that here's a cloud going, and behind it, the priests are carrying the ark, right? And then behind you have Judah and a number of other tribes, and then you have some of the priests and their things and some more tribes, and it continues going back. And in fact, the pillar of fire would stop. They would then go, it's like Yahweh going, X marks the spot. This is where the ark goes. And the word would come in, boom. And they would set everything up around. Now, by the way, I've always been under the impression that you could see the ark in reality of its gold being carried. Remember, there were actual covers that would go over the ark. So the actual ark, when you saw it moving in front of you, there were covers that went over that ark. You weren't going to see specifically this gold box, the cherubim and all that. There was a covering over them. And by the way, there were skins. Isn't that interesting? There'd be skins over this container, which was meant to carry his word as it traveled. Things to consider. The pillar of fire represented Yahweh and his glory. The pillar led them out and in and along the way. The ark would follow the pillar. Isn't that interesting? So the word was following after where Yahweh was going. To some degree, you could not separate Yahweh from his word because they were continually going in the same direction because his word was tied to him. The people would follow the ark. Does the ark represent something? That's the question to ask. Does it represent something that he's trying to get across to us, maybe deeper than just the reality of a box? Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 6. And I got this in red, very important. We're going to get to it in a minute. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh our God, Yahweh is one. You might have heard that one before. You shall love Yahweh with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. That might sound familiar too. And these words which command you today shall be in your heart. Now, isn't it interesting? The Yahweh goes, you know what? I want you to build me a box and put my word in it. And that's what the whole thing's going to be about. It's the box of my word and the tent of my word. And one of the first times he talks about it is put my word in your hearts. And didn't this whole thing start with giving from the heart? And so the heart was being given pieces of gold and all of these jewels, all these pieces. So it starts from the heart, and now Yahweh says, in your heart, I want you to put my words. And by the way, it's connected to the point of being one. Notice that Yahweh and his word are constantly journeying together. They are always one. Deuteronomy 11, 18, and 19. Therefore, you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign upon your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Now, the point here, and traditional Judaism has tefillin, boxes that are made that actually have this commandment in them, and you would tie it to the arm, and depending on the tradition, there are certain ways to tie them. And if you're in another tradition, you're doing it completely wrong. And one that's on the forehead. The point being here is that his word was constantly to be on our hands, things we were doing on our arm. And the arm, what's intriguing, is Yahweh's strength. So our strength was meant to be Yahweh and his word. The point of being between our eyes was that it was sitting right here. Now, that's interesting because he says we're going to store up his words in our what? Our heart. Now, a lot of you are sitting here going, yeah, but the heart's down here. Okay? I didn't put these up, but please go and check. He talks about the meditations of our heart. Last time I checked, I don't think the heart as an organ is meditating or thinking, or the thoughts of my heart. Okay, so we have to get out of our head this idea that where we're putting our words is this organ right here that's a muscle pumping blood. Now, don't hear me wrong. There's an important point. This is our life source. That's important. Okay? But the point being is the word is going to be here. And it's right here. And it's sort of like everywhere I go, think of back, you're 15 years old, and this is where you have a zit. Right? And that zit's just big enough, right, that no matter where you look, it is constantly in the field of vision. Right? And the point being is His Word is constantly before you so that every decision you make is made with the reality that His Word is right there. Single focus. Single determination. It is right there in front of you. Just like the nose on your face. Again, lay up my words in your heart. Deuteronomy 30, 11 and 12. For this commandment which I command you today is not too mysterious or too hard for you, nor is it far off. It's not in heaven that you should say, who will ascend to the heavens for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it? Nor is it beyond the sea, this is 13 and 14, that you should say, who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it? But the word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. And what's the purpose of that? That you may do it, right? The point being was, when the word was there, the pillar of fire was there, and the pillar would jump, and the word would do what? It was meant to follow. Same purpose. Why is the word in your heart? Same purpose, to help you follow Him, to help you obey Him. Ezekiel 3:10, moreover, He said to me, Son of man, receive into your hearts all of my words that I speak to you and hear with your ears. And He's referring back to Shema. Receive all of those words in your heart. I find it intriguing. I don't know about you. The sign next door, and please don't hear me wrong. I'm not saying I'm judging. It's one of those where you sit back and go, that's quite interesting. It says, the Ten Commandments are not multiple choice. I think all of us would agree with that, right? But from this side of the fence, we sit back and go, what happened to the Sabbath commandment? Right? Because if we're not multiple choice, if we don't get to choose A, B, C, or D, if basically it's F, all of the above, then we have to accept all of them. One way or another. Psalm 119, 1 through 3. And don't worry, I don't have the entire Psalm 119 up there. Just most of it. Blessed are the undefiled in the way, who walk in the law of Yahweh. Doesn't that sound like the reality of the pillar of fire? Blessed are those who keep His what? Testimonies, His words. Who seek Him with their whole heart. They also do not iniquity. They walk in His ways. Does that sound like the reality? The pillar of fire gets up and then everybody is following after them? 4 and 5. You have commanded us to keep your precepts diligently. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep your statutes. Oh, that you would direct me. Sound familiar? 10:11. With my whole heart I have sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments. For your word I have hidden in my heart. And what's the purpose? That I may not sin against you. I have hidden your word in my heart. And the purpose of it is to not sin, to not cause a problem in our relationship. 35 and 36. Make me walk in the path of your commandments. Sounds like the Israelites. For I delight to incline my heart in your testimonies and not to covetousness. Meaning, we're going to have a wanting, a desire of the word, not a wanting of the things of the world. Then the word became flesh and it walked among us. Now, what's intriguing is, you can be honest, I could take this. So the word was in heaven, right? And then the word became stone, and did not the word walk among us as we traveled through the wilderness? Yes, because the priests would all pick up the side, and guess what they were doing with it? Walking. Carrying it. The Spirit led him into the wilderness to be tempted. The point being here, it is the Spirit that's leading Yeshua out there, and we see that in reality of the glory and the Spirit that is the pillar of fire that's leading, that is a representation of Yahweh leading us, moving us, and that's usually His Spirit. Even into temptation. Now, temptation not here as temptation as we think about it, but being led into a choice, into a test. Are you going to choose Him or choose you? Or for me, am I going to choose God or am I going to choose my plan or my way? Come and follow me and I will make you fishers of men. If you realize the Yeshua is the Word made flesh, then when He says, come and follow me, it's just like, what did the Israelites follow when they follow when we're walking through the desert? They were following the ark. What was the ark? Nothing more than a container that held the Word, which, by the way, had a covering of skin that walked before them, showing them where Yahweh was taking them. To all the works and miraculous things that He was going to do. Now, this is where we're going to try and tie some things together, including the Shema. So when we read John 17, I want you to realize that Yeshua, specifically in regard of John, is John constantly is comparing Yeshua to the Word of God. So as I read this, and as you read it, I want you to think about it like when Yeshua is referring to me, Himself, He's referring to Himself as the Word. Okay? And maybe you'll see it differently. So this is John 17, 20 and 21. I do not pray for these alone, but also those who will believe in me, the Word, through their Word. For they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you. Now, wouldn't we say that the Word and that pillar of fire, which is representing God, were they not one as they went forth on their journey? Of course they were. That they may also be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. 22 and 23. And the glory which you gave me, I have given them. They may be one just as we are one. I in them. Interesting. I in them. Where are you supposed to store up the words? In our hearts. So if the Word is supposed to be in them, in us, and then if He is in them, then you are in me. Well, guess what? Yahweh says He is always going to be dwelling with His Word. His Word was going to be one place, and there was going to be Yahweh dwelling with His Word. And it wasn't until His Word got there that He would be dwelling among them. I in you, and you in me, that they may be made perfect or complete in one, that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them as you have loved me. As Yahweh's loved His Word, so He has loved us. 24, Father, I desire that they also, whom you gave me, may be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory, which you have given me, for you loved me before the foundation of the world. Again, this is not referring to Yeshua the man who's speaking right here. He's referring to Himself in light that He is the Word of God that existed in its perfect glory from the very beginning of time. And what's intriguing, when He says, let them be with me, so the Word goes back to be with the Father, correct? In its original glory. And if we go to live with the Word, then guess who else we're living with? God. Yahweh. Because the Word and Yahweh are one. They always have been. 25 and 26, O righteous Father, the world has not known you, but I have known you, and these have known that you sent me. And I have declared to them your name, and will declare it, that the love which you have loved me may be in them and I in them. Again, He's referring to the reality that how can He be in us? That the Word would be in us. Considerations. Moses wears a veil. Why? Because his face shines like the face of God. Now, isn't it interesting that there is a veil in front of the holy place? Right? So we wouldn't see the glory. We wouldn't become afraid. Again, going back to the idea, maybe, I don't know if you've gotten there yet, maybe this is our ark. Maybe this was the container that was made prior that's supposed to be filled with his testimony. Right? Maybe. Give us a heart of flesh. The point being is we had a heart of stone. That was the commandments as they were written. Guess what? The word wasn't just written on stone. There's a point in our history where the word was written on flesh and walked among us. And he was a living ark. And by the way, at the time Yeshua walked among us, there was no ark in the temple. There was no pillar of fire at the temple. This is why you had groups that would say, why do we keep doing all these ceremonies at the temple if God's not there? Highly possible why John goes, I'm going out by the water because even though my dad is serving in the temple, I don't see a purpose in that. Because only through repentance is God going to come back. So maybe for John, he's the reality of, I need the next stage. I need purpose in that reality. Yeshua was called Emmanuel, God with us. What was the purpose of building the tabernacle and all this? So the Word would be with us so Yahweh could dwell with us, right? I don't think that's by accident. Yeshua says, destroy this temple and I will rebuild it in 3 days. He refers to his body as a temple. Other considerations. The mountain was on fire, and that fire was a representation that Yahweh was there among them. Yahweh spoke out of that fire. Isn't it interesting that the pillar of fire would be over the actual ark and from the place where Yahweh would speak? Right? Above his word. Yahweh's pillar came over the tabernacle when it was set up. Yahweh's glory filled the tabernacle to a point that Moses could not go in. Completely filled it. Now, that pillar of fire, and I need you to get a mindset right now. That pillar of fire, how important was it to you? That pillar of fire decided whether you were going to get more sleep tonight. That pillar of fire decided whether you were leaving today and going somewhere else or if you were staying for a few days. Do you think that you might, look up every once in a while to see what's going on with the pillar of fire? Do you think that there might be reports going, the minute someone saw it move, that was a report that just flew through the entire camp? Because everybody knew, not only was that the reality of Yahweh being there, but it was of the reality of His Spirit moving us. Now, imagine that you don't see that pillar of fire now for a few hundred years. The temple's empty. And what are you waiting for? You're waiting for Yahweh to come and show you this reality of a place that He's going to meet with you, right? Now, everybody got this picture in your mind. You're so focused on this pillar because this pillar represents Yahweh. Acts 2, 1 and 2. When the day of Shavuot or Pentecost had fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. And suddenly there came a sound from the heaven as if a rushing mighty wind, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting. Verses 3 and 4. And there appeared on them divided tongues of what? Fire. and one sat upon each of them, and they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak with tongues as the Spirit had given them utterance. There's your pillar. Now, you have God's people from all nations walking over, and they see this little pillar of fire above the head. What are they going to think? Yahweh is with us. That our body is a tabernacle to Him, and this is a representation of His presence. And I even wonder, remember it says He spoke out of the what? Fire on Mount Sinai. And all the people understood. I somewhat wonder how much, whether it was the people speaking, the disciples, or if Yahweh was just completely just speaking through them through the fire. You see, these pillars of fire were not by accident, nor are they just to go, well, why in the world are they there? They were assigned to the people. You've been looking for my presence. It's right here. And what did Yeshua do to say to disciples? I will send forth the Spirit to teach you the words that I've taught you or help you remember them. Well, where do they have those words? Here. To help remind. 1 Corinthians 3:16-17. Do you not know that you are the temple of God, and the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. Or are you? Now, I wanted to give one significance above this before I get to this. That means as a vessel, you have to be completely pure on the inside and on the outside. Yeshua speaks to the Pharisees as being whitewashed tombs because they're what? Clean on the outside, but they are dead bones on the inside. The point being for us is we're meant to be an ark. To carry the Word of God, there must be an actual purity on the inside and on the outside. But I wanted to show you a significance of having His Word. Because you see, the Word was not the only thing asked to be put in here. Right? So Exodus 16:32-33. Then Moses said, "This is the thing which Yahweh's commanded. Fill an omer with it," this is manna by the way, "to be kept for your generations, that you may see the bread which I fed you in the wilderness, then I brought you out of the land of Egypt." So the point is, remember that He brought it out of Egypt. And He fed them. And Moses said to Aaron, "Take a pot and put an omer of manna in it and lay it before Yahweh to be kept for your generations." Verses 34 and 35. "As Yahweh commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the what? Testimony to be kept, so as by the word. And the children of Israel ate manna for 40 years until they came to the inhabited land. And they ate manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan." So in this journey, He completely provided, and this manna was to be a reminder. Now, you're like, what's the point? After all of this, this is what you're going to end with? Well, here's the point. Facts about manna. In the morning, if you gathered it, you're supposed to eat it that day. If you laid it up to morning, it would stink and it'd be filled with worms. Every single day, for 6 days of the week. Except for the 6th day, so I say 5 days. I got to back up on that. What's intriguing is on Shabbat, something miraculous happened. The manna lasted an extra day. Didn't stink. No worms. She's like, ooh, only good for 1 day. Now it's good for 2 days, but every week, consistently. But to me, this is what's most important. In the ark, the manna would last forever. Not 2 days. Not one. Here's the reality. Yahweh made this to be a temporary thing. It actually burnt up when the sun came out, which I still don't understand that you can bake it, but the sun causes it to evaporate. I still don't, that's miraculous in itself. But if we are with his word in his presence, that which is temporary lasts forever, has no expiration. The wood that is completely encapsulated in gold will never decay. And so the point of this is there are a lot of lessons from the reality of the ark. And to realize that you are a mobile tabernacle. The word was meant to move. You're meant to be moved. What's incredible is that if we meditate on his word, if we think about his word here, then he will meet with us here. He will speak with us here. And we will hear his words here. And those words are constantly going, here's some more words. And I think about it like this as I end. If I give my son a treasure and he treasures it, he protects it, then I trust him with a little more treasure. And if he treasures that and protects it, I'm willing to say that I'm willing to trust him with some more. And I think that's the reality of Yahweh's word. To those that are faithful in small things, well, small things are given. But if we're faithful in small things, then more responsibility is given to us. Right? What's most incredible in this whole process is that here's Yahweh doing all of these details, and we at this point get the ability to sit back and go, to look at what he did in Exodus, what he did in Deuteronomy, what he did in Jeremiah, what he's talking about in the Psalms, what Yeshua did, and be at a point now where we can go, he was talking about us. He was talking about us. He didn't want to dwell among us. He wanted to dwell in us. And how awesome that is. To him be the glory forever and ever and ever. Yevarecha Yahweh Vayishmerecha. May Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yar Yahweh panavidecha vihunecha. Ki Yahweh agas rosto spendeser soberti ite ortega ortorge sumendad. May Yahweh's face shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yisi Yahweh panavidecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. Que Yahweh muestre su rostro sobre ti y te conceda su paz. May Yahweh's face turn toward you and give you his perfect shalom, his perfect peace. Shabbat shalom.